Introducing our judge of probate, Malvin Peterson.
Madam President Kennedy, guests and members of the self-help organization and convention here, I'm appearing here tonight not with any prepared text, without any documentation, without any notes on fact situations. I'm merely here to observe your convention and learn what I can about your organization. As I understand it, it is a recent organization. I have no personal axe to grind here this evening. I am not running for office. I have 4 more years to run on my present term. I'm here, I hope, to impress you with the fact that I'm here sincerely interested in your problems, to learn myself what I can. You have an able speaker here, Dr. Salzer from the University of Minnesota, whom I intend to hear, and I will remain here for his speech. And I just merely wish to make a few remarks about our situation here in the metropolitan area. Ramsey County and Hennepin County both have similar procedures in this area of mental treatment, and it is a method of procedure that is developed over a period of years that is designed to help the individual, to help the patient, and try to assure him of the greatest protection that we can afford as far as personal liberties are concerned, commensurate with what society permits. A probate judge and a court of commitment exercises powers that are established by the legislature, who in turn are empowered by the people to enact these laws, and the laws represent what society demands to be put into the laws and the procedures that society demands. So there's an old saying that the Lord helps the one who helps himself, and I think that's very applicable here to your society. I'm very happy that you're able to get together and try to help yourself, and I will do what I can to work along with you to achieve some of the objectives which you wish to achieve. And I know that this is a very difficult area. It's difficult for you, it's difficult for me, it is difficult for everyone who works in it. However, with the advancements we do have in this modern age, I think that the aspects dealing with personal liberties of an individual can better be protected as we go along. They have made tremendous advancements over what we've had in the past, and I'm sure that we can do better in the future. I think what we need in this whole area is a matter of social understanding. Demands understanding on your part. You must understand the philosophy of the individuals who enforce the rules and the laws. The people who enforce the laws must understand your problem. We must have mutual understanding, and this also requires understanding on the part of society itself. Because society will get what society demands, and a court will enforce the law that society demands. As I said before, the court merely is an instrument of the people for the judicial functions in carrying out and enforcing the laws that are on the statute books. Now, in this county, Hennepin County and Ramsey County, the procedures for the care of the mentally ill persons are based on a philosophy to try to make them as voluntary as possible. Now, I imagine there are many individuals who would disagree with that statement, but in any event, I wish to assure you that that is the philosophy which permeates the administrative end of the mental personnel who deal in this area. First of all, it is very difficult to have a person committed in this county in any summary fashion. There are certain procedures set up here to protect the individual, such as medical consultation before petitions are accepted, and after petitions are accepted upon medical advice in most cases. Then we have periods of observation in hospitals here locally, so that before someone is sent off to a state institution, there has been a period of observation where private care, and as distinguished from a state institutional care, can be afforded. Now, if a family is financially equipped so that this can be sustained for a period of time, of course, then such care can be carried out for a longer period of time. I know that in some cases where the finances are available, this becomes more theoretical than real. However, the system that we have, we try to conduct as far as we possibly can the treatment locally before commitments are made. And I might say too that it's been my observation that we do have a large amount of releases. It seems that the superintendents are interested in releasing patients as fast as they can, and what they can do with safety, and what they can do without being exposed to criticism of society. So in organizing like you have here, I think that there are many things you can do which will help relieve the situation, because as I mentioned before, the important thing is the demands of society. Society demands a certain amount of protection and a certain amount of freedom from personal irritation. We're all under a great deal of pressure in these times. We're in the atomic age, what we call, and everybody's subjected to a great deal of nervous stress, great deal of responsibility. We live in a fast-moving world, and our nervous system sometimes can't take the guff. Sometimes I wonder myself, after many long days of hard work, whether my own would stand up. But of course, some of us do not have nervous systems which are quite as good as others, and so we have mental problems, mental breakdowns, nervous strains, and in great bulk of these cases, these can be taken care of by getting medical help. And so if your organization can go ahead in this area and provide some method whereby the patient is treated in such fashion that society isn't exposed to the irritation that some of these problems may have to them, recognizing that our members, other members of the populace also have problems, also have strains, and some of them are trying to keep away from being institutionalized themselves, so that they naturally don't want any more irritation than they possibly can get away from. So you're subjected to that. And therefore, if an organization such as this can develop means, methods, and ways of treatment whereby the individual can be taken off the street, so to speak, and get some care privately and voluntarily, then, of course, the demands of society to make upon commitments will be much less. And so I think there is a great area and a great field for private care of some form of private institutional care where persons can remain and live and have guidance of somebody that sympathizes with them and some other people maybe that are in the same boat and can give them moral inspiration, and therefore adjust themselves to society and within that localized situation and relieve society of the stress. When this occurs, of course, our legislators, the judiciary, the courts that administer the law will naturally come to recognize what society demands, and you'll be able to progress in your area. So tonight I just appear here to offer you my inspiration, my sincere concern for your interests, and I hope that you will understand what we are also trying to accomplish. And I think you started something which can, if properly carried out with right purposes, can really accomplish something which will be of great value in the mental area. I thank you for your kind attention.
Judge Peterson, as you know, is going to remain here to hear what Dr. Salzer has to say. And if you have some questions afterwards that you might want to ask him also, I believe it's best to save the questions until after Dr. Salzer is finished. So I'm introducing Dr. Edward Salzer from the Medical School, University of Minnesota.
Mrs. Kennedy, Judge Peterson, I suspect much of what I have to say tonight will actually illustrate Judge Peterson's point regarding the social issues that are involved in the involuntary institutionalization of people. The thesis I'm going to present to you tonight is essentially this, that people who are committed to institutions involuntarily are, in a sense, committed there on primarily social grounds. That is, the question of science and medicine and psychiatry, which often are introduced into the involuntary institutionalization of an individual, are in fact not real considerations. The reason I offer this thesis is this. The concept I'm going to forward to you tonight is that mental illness, so to speak, and there are many terms used as synonyms for this, many euphemisms used, is A, not mental, and B, not an illness. That A, it is not mental, it is a problem of human behavior. Two, in regard to the illness aspect of it, it is not illness, but socially, essentially, socially unacceptable behavior. Behavior which, from the point of view of those people who impinge on the person's life and environment, is undesirable behavior. Behavior which is irritating, perhaps annoying, unpleasant, or in some cases, not of advantage to that person in their everyday life. I will try to give several examples of this later on. I've been talking a lot about general problems, talking a lot about problems throughout the country. I think most of us are residents, citizens of the state of Minnesota. Therefore, I think we'd probably be interested in what is the situation in this state. How does Minnesota, for example, define the mentally ill person? In the revised statutes of 1957, it means any person of unsound mind and in need of treatment, control, or care. The criterion for being hospitalized against one's will, in the same law, that you're, quote, in need of treatment, end of quote. A pre-hearing medical examination is ordered by the court, requires two physicians. The provision for notification of the hearing in which this is to be taken, the hearing in which this is to be the matter under discussion, is to be delivered to a guardian, not necessarily the patient, and notice is optional to the patient. Hearings for a judicial determination of hospitalization against one's will is mandatory. It can, however, be on almost any location. It need not occur in a courtroom. It does not require the presence of the patient, does not require a jury trial, as you would expect. It does not permit a jury trial even on demand. A person may be institutionalized in an institution which is not a public one. It can also be committed to a private institution. In the state, a temporary type of commitment is possible for a period of 60 days. Temporary or observational hospitalization is generally called. It requires physicians to be employed to determine this. An emergency detention can be sought by any person in the state. The maximum time, however, that you can be kept in the institution is 120 hours on this emergency basis. A patient may be represented by counsel in the state, appointed by the court. The fee, according to the 1957 statutes, I understand I may be in error on this point, but my understanding is the fee, according to that statute as I recall it, is not to exceed $25 per day, to be paid either by the county or the state. Once you're in the institution, the patient's right to correspond with either the state agency, in this case the Public Welfare Department, or an official, in this case the governor, is recognized. But there is no statutory provision in this state for a person in the hospital that provides safeguards for his right to communicate with his counsel, attorney. In other words, if you wish to communicate with your counsel, this can be administratively prevented. You do not have a legal safeguard in the sense of a statutory provision to provide for it. Your rights to receive visitors are not protected by the laws of the state. This is determined entirely by administrative decision. No periodic examinations are required by law in this state. Unless other provisions are made, the executive of the hospital has control of your funds. In other words, you may, in many jurisdictions, and possibly often in Minnesota, be required to pay for treatment and hospitalization you never sought, you never wanted, and still don't want, but you may be required to pay for it. You may be transferred from one state institution to another without notice to yourself as a patient, your spouse, or your guardian. Another interesting characteristic of law in this state and in other states is that the law provides sterilization on the basis that you are mentally ill. And fortunately in this state, I say fortunately, I mean that because it is not true in many other states, sterilization can only be performed in this state by the consent of the patient. I should point out that in many other states this is not true. Sterilization may be performed on people labeled mentally ill, mentally unstable, people labeled epileptic, mentally deficient, sexual perverts, or sexual psychopaths, without their consent, the consent of the family or the guardian. The situation I portray is not a happy one. I think Minnesota has itself advantages in its laws over some other states. I think that, however, the laws of this state, as well as the laws of all our brethren states, leave a great deal to be desired. I think the law should follow two other prior decisions. That is, the law should be a reflection of what society as a whole wants. I think Judge Peterson referred to this before. That is, our law should reflect that which we determine as being desirable. Each society pretty much does that to some extent. We can view it, though, I say two ways. One in a socially acceptable fashion, the other one in the ethically acceptable fashion. Because in addition to, in a sense, saying, well, we like this kind of behavior or dislike this kind or approve it or disapprove of it, I think we also have to determine an ethical or, if you like, moral question in our decisions. We have to include the problems of who is to decide, who has superior wisdom. These are not scientific questions. I don't think anyone can be demonstrated to have superior wisdom on the basis of his knowledge about science. I don't think superior wisdom comes out of any particular professional field. I don't think I would like to see clergymen, physicians, psychologists, attorneys, judges, or any profession assume superior wisdom for the rest of society. I think that superior wisdom, whatever it is not a product of a person's degree, that is, from a college or a university, from his training. I don't think we can declare that superior wisdom comes with election to public office. I don't think that the wisdom, superior wisdom, comes from any of these roads. I think, though, we have to answer the question as to whether or not we are to bow to someone else's superior wisdom. I think this question has to be answered for each one of us. I don't think there is an easy answer. I don't think that we can glibly continue to accept some aspects of our current procedures in regard to the psychiatric patient, so-called mentally ill or mentally disabled patient, some aspects of involuntary institutionalization. I think we have to examine these